This is Raleigh Burley, KDNK News Director. For today's Public Affairs Show, we introduce something different and new for the station. Lisa Goddard, founder of the nonprofit Roaring Fork Insight, will share stories, poems, and thoughts on integrating present mindful awareness into our busy lives. We hope that you enjoy this segment as we explore future collaborations.
Lisa Goddard. I'm the founder of Roaring Fork Insight, a nonprofit that brings mindfulness education into schools and also provides community meditation classes in Carbondale and Aspen. Today I've been invited to share with you about mindfulness. So mindfulness is everywhere. Waiting in line at the grocery store, you'll come across at least one publication promoting mindfulness. So why? There's been countless studies that have found that mindfulness practice can actually change the brain. It reduces stress, anxiety, and depression. It helps with focus and emotional regulation. So what is it? In my training at UCLA, we spent an entire day on coming up with a definition. And we came up with paying attention in the moment with interest, curiosity, and a willingness to be with what is. Now, one could argue that to just be mindful isn't enough. You could be a mindful sniper or a mindful burglar. This is where pulling from the ancient Buddhist tradition, from where mindfulness is rooted, offers a much-needed ethical framework that integrates compassion, empathy, and caring. One of my teachers, Jack Kornfield, the founder of Spirit Rock Meditation Center, author and one of the key teachers that brought mindfulness to the West, often tells a story about a young Marine with deep anger issues, who he worked with to feel into his body in such a way that he was able to sense very quickly when his anger was triggered. Through coming back to his senses, he was able to create a conscious space in which all his reactions could be experienced from enough distance to allow a sort of loving calm in the middle of his storms. So the story goes that the soldier was at the supermarket at the end of a tough evening. The lines were long, and a couple people ahead of him, there was a woman holding a baby with too many items in her cart. This triggered his anger immediately, and his mind raged with angry assessments. "I'm exhausted. These lines are ridiculous. She shouldn't be in the express lane, but of course she doesn't even think about where she is." To make matters worse, the woman hands the baby over to the cashier, another woman who cooed and snuggled, and so the line was held up even longer. And the officer suddenly realized, oh, this is anger, and he started to breathe deeply, sensing his tension, his contracting body, observing his pain and anguish. And he became aware of the stories he was telling in his mind. In a few moments, something in him started to relax and open. He looked out again and saw that, oh, he's actually a cute kid. When he got up to the cashier, he said, "That was a cute little boy." "Oh, did you like him?" she said. "He's my boy. You see, my husband was killed in Iraq last year. So now I have to work two jobs. My mom takes care of him, and she brings him in so I can say goodnight to him." When we train in mindfulness, we cultivate the flexibility of not only our thinking and self-awareness, but our hearts become more opened. And in doing so, we increase the possibility that we can more fully know the human beings around us, and the fact of our kinship can come alive. There is an old Zen story where the student comes to visit his dying teacher. The student asks, "What is the teaching of your entire lifetime?" The teacher replies, an appropriate response. Mindfulness practice provides that pause, so an appropriate response to whatever you're facing is available. If you're just tuning in, I'm Lisa Goddard, founder of Roaring Fork Insight, a nonprofit that brings mindfulness education into schools and community meditation classes in Carbondale and Aspen. Today, we are exploring mindfulness and the practice of quieting the mind and tending to the heart. Joseph Campbell, a mythologist and writer, has another way of looking at this. Imagine a circle. The circle is you. Through the circle is a horizontal line. Everything above the line is what you're conscious of. Everything below the line is unconscious. Our mindfulness practice is to bring into awareness what is below the line that has been unconscious and unknown. So in a sense, mindfulness is intimacy. We get to know ourselves and our experiences more intimately. And when we fully open, we get to experience this beauty of life, its 10,000 joys and its 10,000 sorrows. A lovely story that illustrates this is about Franz Kafka. And the story goes that he encountered a little girl in the park where he walked daily. She was crying. She had lost her doll and was desolate. Kafka offered to help her look for the doll and arranged to meet her the next day at the same location. Unable to find the doll, he composed a letter from the doll and read it to her when they met. "Please do not mourn me. I have gone on a trip to see the world. I will write you of my adventures." This was the beginning of many letters. When he and the little girl met, he read to her from these carefully composed letters the imagined adventures of the beloved doll. The little girl was comforted. When the meetings came to an end, Kafka presented her with a doll. She obviously looked different from the original doll. An attached letter explained, "My travels have changed me." Many years later, the now grown girl found a letter stuffed into an unnoticed crevice of the cherished replacement doll. In summary, it said, "Everything that you love, you will eventually lose. But in the end, love will return in a different form." Mindfulness practice helps us quiet the mind and tend to the heart. And what can the heart know? The heart can know that everything changes, that we have views and opinions, and so do other people, that grasping and holding on doesn't work well, that suffering comes from resisting the way things are, that hatred never ends by hatred, but by love alone is healed. Carl Jung puts it this way: "Your vision will become clear only when you can look into your own heart. Who looks outside dreams. Who looks inside awakens." So we practice to see clearly into our own heart and mind. I love how David Foster Wallace, the writer, shares his self-awareness. He writes, "A huge percentage of the stuff that I tend to be automatically certain of is, it turns out, totally wrong and deluded. I have learned this the hard way, as I predict you will too." Here is just one example of the total wrongness of something I tend to be automatically sure of. Everything in my own immediate experience supports my deep belief that I am the absolute center of the universe, the realest, most vivid, and important person in existence. We rarely think about this sort of natural basic self-centeredness because it's so socially repulsive. But it's pretty much the same for all of us. It is our default setting, hardwired into our brains at birth. Think about it. There is no experience you've had that you are not the absolute center of. The world as you experience it is there in front of you, or behind you, or to the left or of the right of you, on your TV, on your monitor, and so on. Other people's thoughts and feelings have to be communicated to you somehow, but your own are so immediate, urgent, and real. So we experience the world through our lenses of separateness. We push away what we don't want, wanting to be separate from something or someone, and biologically the body is designed to protect itself, to protect our identity. Yet this aversion to people and situations is really a sign that something in us needs to be attended to. It cuts us off. When we identify less with I, me, and mine through the practice of mindfulness, we taste the peace and ease that is available. If you're just joining us, this is Lisa Goddard, founder of Roaring Fork Insight, a nonprofit that brings mindfulness education into schools and meditation classes to the Roaring Fork Valley. So I'd like to share a story within a story from a book by J.J. Gold called Another Heart in His Hand. And in the story, it's about a mentor and a mentee. And in part of the story, there is a story about separateness. There is an ocean, and the ocean is love. There is a bottle floating in the ocean. The bottle is full of water. The bottle is you. And if you break it, there is no bottle alone. It's just the ocean. The mentor says, "It's so dramatic to feel the cap of our bottle loosen even just 1/16 of an inch. We feel like it's all falling apart, and in a way, that is what's happening. All the water in us is ocean water, and all the water outside of us is ocean water. It's all ocean water. Then there's this bottle. There's this I, me, you, what I want, what I need, what I like, what I think, what I don't think that I like. All this separate bottle business. The bottle breaks, and the water goes into the ocean. That break of a bottle is not only the physical death that we arrive at after some number of years. That breaking also happens in moments. And I would be surprised if you haven't experienced to some degree that small breaking of that bottle. Am I right?" So, wherever you are right now, in the car or at your desk, find a person, a human being, and let your gaze settle on them. If you're alone, bring to mind somebody in your life, someone significant or not. A cashier at the grocery store, the person who cuts your hair or provides childcare, the hitchhiker, the homeless person. Just look or sense another person. Say to yourself, "This person has a body and mind just like me. This person feels emotions, thoughts, joy, and sorrow just like me. This person has in the course of their life experienced physical pain and suffering, just like me. This person has been sad and disappointed, just like me. This person has been angry at some point, just like me. This person is worried and is frightened sometimes, just like me. This person longs for friendship, just like me. This person wants to be free from suffering, just like me. This person wants to be caring and kind, just like me. This person wishes to be safe, healthy, and happy, just like me." When our hearts start to open, we see so clearly ourselves in others, and the happiness for another becomes what we see. What keeps us from experiencing our connection to life, our connection to others, is the mind that is caught in wanting and pushing away. The wanting mind has a quality of, if only. If only I had that relationship. If only I had that job, that home. Billions of dollars are spent on ads to keep us wanting, and wanting is clearly a part of our existence. The problem is, the satisfaction that we're wanting is fleeting. Wanting takes us away from where we are. We postpone our satisfaction, and the mindfulness practice provides the pause for us to see when the wanting mind is activated. Now, not wanting and pushing away is the other way we cut ourselves off from experiencing the moments that make up our life. And there is no shortage of unpleasant situations in our life. It's how we choose to meet them, how we respond. Ajahn Chah, a Buddhist meditation master and teacher to many Western teachers, says this: even though we can't yet let go, we're aware of these states. Being aware of ourselves, our attachments, we come to see that such grasping is not the path. We know, but we still can't let go. But that knowing is 50%. Another story on how we manage our lives. An elderly man wanted to plant his annual tomato garden, but he was getting older, and he was really sad that his son Vincent, who was in prison, wasn't there to help him. So he writes to his son in prison, "Dear Vincent, I'm feeling pretty sad because I won't be able to plant my tomato garden this year, and it gives me so much pleasure. I'm just getting too old to dig up the tomato plot. I know if you were here, my troubles would be over. I know you would be happy to dig the plot for me, just like the old days. Love, Papa." A few days later, he received a letter from his son. "Dear Pop, don't dig up that garden. That's where the bodies are buried." At 4 a.m. the next morning, the FBI agents and local police arrive and dug up the entire area and didn't find any bodies. They apologized to the old man and left. That same day, he received another letter. "Dear Pop, go ahead and plant the tomatoes now. That was the best I could do under the circumstances." So we do what we can to manage our lives. Wendell Berry, the poet and environmentalist, has this to say about our real work. "It may be that when we no longer know what to do, we have come to our real work. And that when we no longer know which way to go, we have come to our real journey. The mind that is not baffled is not employed. The impeded stream is the one that sings." Now, here in the Roaring Fork Valley, we live around beautiful rivers, and the sound of the river that flows through our valley is so wonderful and soothing to so many of us. Yet the water is moving over rocks and tree roots, obstacles. It is obstacles that bring the beautiful sounds. The impeded stream is the one that sings. Our lives are impeded with obstacles, and mindfulness practice is a practice of being with those obstacles, seeing them clearly, being with those 10,000 joys and sorrows, the heartbreak and the communion. When we quiet the mind and tend to the heart, we get to see our human potential. How love has luminosity. We get to experience this mystery of being alive on this planet we call Earth. We become aware of the ways we get lost and how we don't shine. We see our patterns and how we get caught in them. And it doesn't matter the content of our practice. It is the content of waking up to this mystery of this being human. An old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. "A fight is going on inside me," he said to the boy. "It's a terrible fight, and it is between two wolves. One is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego." He continued, "The other is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. The same fight is going on inside of you and inside of every person, too." The grandson thought about this for a minute, and then he asked his grandfather, "Which wolf will win?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "The one we feed." I'm Lisa Goddard, the founder of Roaring Fork Insight, a nonprofit that brings mindfulness education into schools and provides community meditation classes in Carbondale and Aspen. For more information about community offerings, please visit roaringforkinsight.org or come practice at True Nature Healing Arts on Monday evenings from 7 to 8:15. All teachings are freely given, but your support really helps. I'd like to leave you with a poem by Dorothy Hunt. "Do you think peace will come some other place than here? Some other time than now? In some other heart than yours? Peace is this moment without judgment. That is all. This moment in the heart space where everything that is welcome. Peace is this moment without thinking that it should be some other way, that you should feel some other thing, that your life should unfold according to your plans. Peace is this moment without judgment, this moment in the heart space where everything that is welcome." Thank you for your kind attention, and thank you to the supporters and listeners of KDNK Radio.